I'd like to call to order the Ways and Means Committee for today.
How you doing?
And we don't quite have a quorum, but we're still going to get started. Representative Fabian, we have what we need for Representative Hackbarth to go first, so I think I'm going to take his bill up first, and you'll be second, so we stay according to the agenda. We are... we are going to have an amendment to the Hackbarth bill. It has been discussed with Representative Carlson, the DNR, and everybody's ready to sign off on it. So the first thing is we'd like to note the roll. As soon as we have a quorum, I'll officially call the meeting to order. And the next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the October 17th. Oh, okay, what's the date of the minutes? 24th. Thank you. Representative Downey moves approval of the minutes from the 24th of January. Any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion's approved. All right, the next item on the agenda is House File 55. Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and I would move House File 55 be recommended passed and be sent to the floor.
All right, thank you. If you'd briefly explain your bill while we pass out the A2 amendment.
I'll explain the bill first, Madam Chair, and the bill is the lands bill from last session, last year, and just for a little explanation, last year, the lands bill was also included and combined with the game and fish bill. And as we all know, the game and fish bill and the lands bill was vetoed by the governor. The game and fish bill is the part that had some controversy to it and some problems with it and disagreements with it. It had nothing to do with the lands bill that was combined into the game and fish bill. So this was separated out, brought forward again this year, and it's a... almost exactly the same. Some things have been taken out by the DNR, but it's really pretty much the same. Nothing's been added into it. Some things have been taken out because the issues have been taken care of. So it's made it through the process. There's been no controversy and no problems except for what the A2 amendment will fix. The Fond du Lac tribe has come forward, and they would like this comfort language added to the bill about a parcel that's in the bill, and it just talks about the right of first refusal, and it guarantees them that they will have the right of first refusal on that one little parcel of land that's going to be sold. So with that, Madam Chair, I would move the A2 amendment. There's no controversy.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. And it's my understanding that this land is completely surrounded by land owned
Fond du Lac land.
By the tribe, and would make sense that they might be interested in it. Are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Representative Carlson.
I just would point out I did have a chance just before the meeting to talk to a representative of the Fond du Lac tribe, and explained that this is needed mainly for clarification, that there's been, since I think 1985, this policy in place. So I would encourage support for it.
All right, thank you. Any additional questions or comments on the A2 amendment? If not, Representative Hackbarth renews his motion for approval of the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. All right, we have the House File 55 as amended in front of the committee. Are there any questions? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I remember the bill from last session, and there is one provision in there that I found a bit troubling a year ago, and I'd like to have Representative Hackbarth or maybe DNR comment. The sale of the land at below market price. That was in the original bill, as I understand it or recall, but I was a little bit troubled by that a year ago, and would just like to get some feedback from either the author or the department on that particular provision.
And Representative Carlson, for committee members, could you tell us where in the bill that language that you have concerns about is located?
I don't have that at my fingertip. Page what?
Seven is what I'm hearing from the other members here. Representative Hackbarth.
Madam Chair, I believe it's Section 10 of the bill, and this is to conform with some legislation that was passed back in 2005 to get some land sold, and the DNR is just trying to comply with the 2005 law. And we could bring Ms. Kathy Lewis from the DNR up if you'd like further explanation. But this land has to be sold, and they're trying to meet every letter of the law, the 2005 law. And so we need to sell that at below appraised value to make that happen. And we can bring them forward if you like.
Representative Carlson.
And Madam Chair, if it's all right, I would like to hear them comment about that. I understand the history of it and why it's here, and it was part of that land sale, but the change here is selling land below market value, and I think if DNR could mention that. It's an old issue, as I acknowledge. It was in the bill a year ago that was passed, but I found it troubling then and just inquiring more information now.
All right, thank you, Representative Carlson. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Kathy Lewis, Assistant Director, Lands and Minerals, DNR. The Section 10 of the bill is addressing a 2005 law that's been amended in 2007 and 2009. It requires state agencies to sell $6.44 million of state-owned land by June 30th of 2011. If the land is not sold, the difference in between what's been sold and not sold will be taken out of the state department agencies' budgets. What the DNR has been doing has been contributing to the sales through the years, as other state agencies have. But overall, the state agencies still are about $2.1 million short in meeting the goal. We brought this proposal forward last year as a means to identify a way to help meet the goal. As you know, the real estate market is very tough out there, and this is a means to raise, possibly get some of the land sold. What we have is lands that have been offered for sale. They've been offered for sale now for at least 6 months or a year. They have not sold, so we've tested the market. We believe that there may be a chance that enough of them will sell to meet the requirement of $6.44 million. I also would mention that in 2009, the legislature adopted a law that says no land within the outdoor recreation system can be sold any longer to meet the goal. So these lands had been removed from the outdoor recreation system before that law was enacted.
Any additional questions?
Well, that explains it. You know, I'm not sure if we can call this a fire sale or not, but when we have real estate that we're selling below market, I think that raises a rather interesting question. I'm not interested in holding up the bill because it did pass last time, other than felt that there should be a bit of an explanation here as to why, because that's 25% less than what the appraised value would be at 75%. And I'm not sure if there's been a new assessment on the value of that land, or if that's, you know, when you mention, or when they mention that the real estate market has changed, I think we all understand that. So has the land value dropped in real terms and we're just reflecting that, or are we selling it for 75% of what the assessed value would still be today in 2011? Maybe they could address that.
Madam Chair, members, the proposal for us is to take the appraised value of the properties. We appraised them last year, so the market was depressed, and we're seeing a pretty similar pattern that the market is going down or staying even, not increasing, obviously. We were not going to reappraise these properties. We were going to take the value from last year. I would comment that one of the areas we have is we have some properties that would be interest to developers, and the developers basically have a 10-year market supply out there, so it's very difficult to find a developer for some of the parcels.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative
Madam Chair, that does answer part of the question. At least it was appraised in 2010, so that's a fairly recent appraisal, but then we're going to be 25% below the most recent appraisal. Like I say, I'm not going to hold up the bill because we did pass it last year, but I think people should understand then that we are to meet that benchmark selling land below appraised value. Just want to draw attention to it.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lewis, the property in Hastings that I believe is probably the bulk of what we're trying to accomplish, the 80 acres on the west half of what used to be a WMA that was donated to DNR from what was originally State Hospital property. Could you clarify again, when was it last appraised for the state of Minnesota?
Madam
Ms.
Chair,
Lewis.
Members, Representative McNamara, the property for the in Hastings was probably appraised late 2009.
Yeah.
The market's gone down since then. And I also would comment that the legislation says up to 75% of appraised value.
Yeah.
And we can do a sale method such as a sealed bid or other methods where we don't have to be down to 75%. We could be in between that. So we would certainly look at those options for the sales.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up. And Ms. Lewis, thank you, Madam Chair. And that was my understanding in my conversations with the DNR that this appraisal is closer to being 2 years old rather than to be up to date. And my own experience around Hastings is the market is depressed more in the 30 to 35% range in the last few years. So I think the reality is we're really not selling this for what the market rate is. I mean, we'll be lucky to be able to sell it at the price that we're asking here because I'm not sure it currently reflects market today. That's my only point, Madam Chair. I think it really is us adapting to the market of today.
Thank you. Representative McNamara, any other comments? Representative Hackbarth, would you like to renew your motion?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I would like to renew my motion. I would have one other further comment that on this Section 12, there is a sunset to it. This is not going to be an ongoing issue. It's just to get this section taken care of and this section of law. There is a sunset built into it. It only pertains to this section of the law.
All right. Thank you. Representative McNamara renews his motion that House File 55, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion's adopted. The next.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, I will move House File 1. Members, the motion that will be considered when we're done with the presentation is for approval and re-referral to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee.
Representative Kahn. The bill will be going to government operations and elections will be the motion.
And then the mayor doesn't come back to you?
Not unless there's a change to the fiscal note. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House File 1 is a bill that's long overdue, in my opinion. For too long, we've seen too many delays. We've seen too many projects held up because of needless time delays. Expenses, costs have been added, not just to proposers that are companies, but also to our local counties and townships and watershed boards. The bill calls for the establishment of goals within the Department of Natural Resources and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency of getting their permits issued or denied in a time frame of 150 days. And I might add that the governor, in his executive order, has come up with the same guidelines on those. We also would like for proposers of projects where they are discharging waters to be able to start the project in a timely manner so that in our country, if you've got the footings poured and shell up in the fall and started your project, you couldn't do any discharging, but you could at least start the project if you wanted to. Also, at the end of the 150 days, and we're asking that the final decisions are made on permits within 30 days. Under both situations, the 150 days and the 30 days, we're asking for reports from the agencies if they're not able to meet the timelines. Excuse me. Within that, we realize that there are some permits that might take longer to go through all the data of the EIS, and we're willing to work with the departments on those to come up with some guidelines for future permits and see if we can't streamline the process. It's taking too long. It's costing too much money. Also, we're asking that the district court be taken out of the litigation and we go straight to the Court of Appeals. Hopefully that will save our counties and cities some money with regards to legal fees and litigation. And we would also like the proposers to be able to work with the preparers, the consultants of their EISs, to see if we can't, again, streamline the process and make for a more efficient timelines of being able to gather the data that's needed. I'll stand for any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. And just so you know, in the packet, there were three documents that Representative Wagenius asked that we include, which is the executive order of Governor Dayton, the press release on that order, and a Star Tribune article. The other handouts were presented by the bill author for the committee. Any questions for the bill author? Representative Lonchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, we haven't met. I'm Representative Lonchesky. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
In my city, I've gone through two EISs, for the Mall of America that required an EIS, and for an amphitheater in a budding community. Burnsville wanted to place an amphitheater facing Bloomington, and Bloomington residents got together and killed that off. But can you tell me how, I think people think of EIS as related to environmental projects that are often in greater Minnesota. How does your bill change, for example, will phase two of the mall require, how will it change an EIS for that kind of a project? Do you know?
Representative Fabian.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative, it really shouldn't change that process. We still have to work with the agencies. You still have to go through all of the data gathering. You have to prepare the EIS. What we're asking for is so that the Mall of America or Roseau County or Kitson County, when they do have permitting or a permit that they're applying for, that it can be done in a more timely manner. So how it would change that particular individual permit, I can't answer that.
Representative Lonchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the amphitheater proposal in the abutting community, the EIS, that system that was in place then, really benefited our residents because they had a lot of stops to make their argument for why they didn't want their property values diminished as it relates to this big development coming really in their backyards. And they were very successful because they could argue in multiple forums over a long calendar the negative impacts of this project to their way of life. So I'm just, is there a shortening here, or is there anything being taken away from residents who use the current law to their benefit?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative, we are not, yes, we are trying to shorten up timelines. We're trying to get projects online sooner. They still have the 30 days when the permit has been given its final approval. There's still that 30-day window in there for them to be able to raise the issues that they need at their local levels.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, as I listened to your presentation, you talked about too many delays, and you acknowledged that Governor Dayton, in his executive order, dealt with that issue. I have questions on two sections. One section you didn't even mention in your introduction, and that is section 5. That is doesn't have to do anything with delays. That has to do with changing the air and water quality standards. And I don't understand why you didn't explain that to the committee.
What we're asking for,
Representative Fabian.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius. What we're asking for there is an explanation on the part of the Department of Natural Resources or the Pollution Control Agency to explain why the federal standards are not sufficient for that particular project. And that's what Section 5 is about.
Representative Wagenius.
Madam Chair, I don't think that's what Section 5 does. I think in Governor Dayton's order, that is what he did. He asked for an explanation. But what you do in here is you do something different, and it's subtle but extraordinarily important. On line 7.2, you use the federal standard does not provide adequate protection for public health and the environment. So that's the standard you are having this measured by. But the standards in law are different from those standards. So if you look back on page 4 of your bill, the current standard is on lines 4.25 for air and through 4.27. So the current standard is shall improve air quality, and it says consistent with the agency's overall goal of reducing all forms of pollution. So you've given us an entirely different standard. I don't like the idea that you're lowering standards, but it also means, I think, an enormous amount of litigation. This is a fun thing. I mean, it's a great jobs creation bill for attorneys, but I don't think it's an appropriate thing to put in statute. So I just want members to recognize that Governor Dayton recognized this and did not put this in his order. The other thing I'd like to talk to you about is Section 9. You did mention that in your presentation, and that's something else that Governor Dayton didn't include in his order, and I think for very good reason. Section 9 creates an unavoidable conflict of interest. The entity with the financial stake cannot be expected to look out for air quality and water quality. So help us understand why you are creating this conflict of interest when it's really our job here to avoid conflicts of interest.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wagenius. The conflict of interest, I think, is not applicable here for me. I think that when you allow the proposer, again, whether it's the canola crushing plant up in Kitson County or it's Roseau County Board of Commissioners who have a project that's going, when they're allowed to deal directly with the consultant who's going to put the information together for the EIS, it allows for better communications. And in that, allow them to have those communications, I don't think that there is a conflict of interest, simply because responsible proposers are going to do the right things because they know that there's somebody watching over their shoulders. They know that they're possibly going to be challenged. And so as a result of that, I would certainly think that anybody who is putting together a proposal for an EIS would do a very, very thorough job of putting all those documents together, having the documentation to present to the responsible government unit when that decision is finally made. And also, they are still subject to all the oversight within that document.
Representative Wagenius.
It still appears to be a fox guarding the chicken coop. And when you say if somebody is a responsible proposer, well, we certainly hope that everybody is the responsible proposer. But this certainly sets up the temptation not to be a responsible proposer. But it also goes absolutely contrary to your stated goal of making this thing faster and cheaper. And if you look at your own fiscal note, on page 4 of your fiscal note, it says Section 7, but it's just because the fiscal note was written before the last amendments in the last committee. It says, this is from DNR, however, recent experience has shown that staff participation in the development of studies by proposer is less costly and uses fewer agency resources than waiting until a report is completed before reviewing it for the first time, as would happen with this provision. Well, I asked PCA, because they didn't make that similar statement, I asked PCA, do you agree with DNR? And they said, yes, this is exactly what would happen. So what you have here is something that is going the opposite direction of what you're telling us your bill does. And I just point that out because so you've got two problems, fox and the chicken coop problem, and you're slowing the process down and costing it more. It does seem like it's not, certainly not faster and better. So I think it should be opposed on that ground alone.
Thank you. Representative Wiggins. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Madam Chairman and Representative Fabian.
Representative Kahn, can you use?
Yes.
Thank you.
One of the parts of state government which I think has been one of the most effective and is an incredible part of the House of Representatives and has had, it's one of the most strongly bipartisan entities that we have, no matter who is in control, is the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And we've all had, every once in a while, sometimes people have problems. When people have problems with something they've done, it's never a criticism of their methodology or their bias or anything like that. It's usually that they don't like the result. So I'm just kind of a little surprised at the push to have this bill when the legislative auditor is about to release a major study of the PCA's pollution permitting process in just a few weeks. And this report will include findings, conclusions, and recommendations. So why wouldn't we wait for this study before moving for final action on this bill? And just as another, I know we've had a certain amount of talk in the House this year about zero-based budgeting, which to my mind makes absolutely no sense. What does make sense is the things which are being done in some other states called results-based accounting or outcomes-based budgeting and so forth. Those are really things that we ought to look at. And it seems to me that this PCA report would be the first thing that we could use as a step in either results-based accounting or outcomes-based budgeting. So why aren't we waiting for it?
Representative Fabian.
Or do you know something that we don't know about it?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative, I do not know something that you don't know, trust me. You know more about the workings around here than I do. That being said, for the people that I represent, this is a very, very important issue. This is an important issue on many fronts, both from our businesses up there and also for our local governments who have been involved in permitting snafus and tangles for years and years and years. And I have had outstanding support from the people in my area to get this done as quickly as we possibly can.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, I mean, unfortunately, my background before I was a legislator was as a scientist, so I tend to put a higher priority on accuracy than either political desirability or correctness. And what I'm saying is that the Legislative Auditor's Office is one of decided on a bipartisan, everything that they do is proposed and accepted on a totally bipartisan basis. And I'm just a little surprised. I'd understand if someone was proposing now to start a legislative auditor's study because they're so good, they're also usually not that fast. But when we know that this study is coming out in just several weeks, why shouldn't we wait to see what that study says so we could really use it in a results-based accounting?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative, one of the things that's built into the bill is a review process. And I'm sure that in the review process, when the permits are being evaluated for their timeliness, the auditor's report is going to be an important part of that review process. when it comes time to deciding why did this report take longer to get, why did this one take a shorter period of time. And in that review process, we built that into this bill by having those goals set. And we are, like I said, very, very willing to work with the departments. We're willing to see what the reports are that come out twice a year to see how those issues can be resolved.
Representative Fan.
Madam Chair, what bothers me is that the reports and the goals seem all towards speed rather than correctness and goodness. And I would just think that having something done well is much, much more important than having it done fast. And I would hope, I don't know what the legislative auditor's report says, but I would hope that some of the things it would talk about is why there are delays and why and what's happened. I've been involved in a couple of EIS statements, and a lot of the delays that went into them were actually delays that came because of the people who were proposing the projects, putting unreasonable things into it. So, as I said, I don't know what it's saying, but I'd certainly want to see it to see how it could inform a bill that's going to deal with the process.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, and I have a couple of concerns on Section 3, lines 2.19 through 2.22. You know, we had a vote in 2008 statewide on the legacy amendment, and overwhelming number of Minnesotans wanted to raise revenue in large part to clean up our water. And I saw in the article that Representative Wagenius was circulating in the Star Tribune, we still have 40% of our waters are impaired. And here it sounds like someone can pollute the water even before a permit is issued. It says at their own risk, but I think it really ends up being everyone's risk because it's water, it's a shared resource, and I'm worried that the taxpayers will be footing the bill for this. And so why would we, you know, given I think strong public sentiment for clean water, allow people to pollute prior to getting a permit? It just doesn't make sense. I'm interested in your thoughts about that.
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, the bill is, in my opinion, not constructed to allow for discharge. It's allowed for the construction to start. And you cannot discharge until you have the permits in hand.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Hornstein's last point, I would equate it to some, Madam Chair. Whoops, I'm still living in the last biennium, sorry. Madam Chair, and to Representative Hornstein, I would equate it to some of the beginnings of similar to design build that is used in your area in the transportation. But we did hear the testimony that it would not include discharge, which is a good point. Madam Chair, and to the members, we did hear from the Office of Legislative Auditor in regards to this bill. He did speak about his pending report coming up. So we did hear in regards to this bill. And then I think it's also important, Representative Fabian, if you could let us know which part of your bill has already been accepted by the administration. And it's my understanding that the rest of the bill that they were not able to do by executive order, they support the other two parts of your bill that we've heard from some of the administration. That really they're in favor of the bill. Is that a true statement?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I think you have the governor's executive order in front of you, do you not?
We do.
Okay. You know, the things that he has in his executive order are some of the main points in here, and I have had conversations. And they do with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and with DNR, and they are, and I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I've certainly got a favorable review from them with regards to this bill.
And Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair and Representative Fabian, you probably did it a lot better than I stated it. I think we've heard favorable things about all the parts of your bill, and Representative Kahn's point that we need to look more thoroughly at this issue after the February 15th release of the OLA report. I think we will have additional permitting discussions after the release of that report. Thank you.
All right. Representative Biskins, then Carlson, Sarah Anderson, and Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Fabian, I was listening to Representative Kahn's questioning of you and her concern that your bill seems to favor speed over accuracy and thoroughness. Yet I have heard over and over and over again that one of our problems with business in the state of Minnesota is that government in particular continues to drag their feet, draw things out. We've got businesses who simply can't sit and wait on a potential investment for so long, and that the laws right now are really skewed against business and moving things forward in any reasonable fashion. So I guess I prefer to tell government it's time to shape up, all right, and it's time to get off the dime and get things going. And so with that, you know, I think 150 days is plenty. Representative Fabian, could you convince me that the words "it is the goal of the state that it be done in 150 days and why you're not simply saying these permits will be done within 150 days or they're considered approved? Why would you use something fuzzy like the goal?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, yes, in the spirit of cooperation, I am willing to at least attempt to allow the agencies to define what permits take longer and why they take longer. And I think that we do realize that there are some that do take a little bit longer. But along those lines, as you said, we have road projects up in my part of the state where it takes up to 4 years to get a permit. And this is simply an improvement on an existing road. If you'd like some testimony on that, I have... I applaud these guys too. I have to editorialize a little bit. I have asked some people to come and testify before different committees. And sadly, many people have chosen not to. And I have confidential letters from them because they are concerned about their testimony here having an impact on whether or not they are given a favorable review in the permitting process. And to address Mr. Representative Biskin's point, I think that speaks very, very poorly of our state government.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I thank you, Representative Fabian, and I knew what the answer was, I must admit, but I simply think it was important to bring out to this committee that you have worked across the aisle. You're working on compromise. That's kind of a foreign word to me, but you're there, and that's a good thing. You're working on compromise and reaching across the aisle, and so I think for those who believe that that is a good thing, you should be applauded.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, hearing Representative Biskin's final comments, he was the ranking member of the Finance Committee, and I thought he was all about compromise. That is very tongue-in-cheek.
No.
The question I do have, though, of Representative Fabian, if you could expand on why you need to move the bill forward, as you indicated in your response to Representative Kahn, at this point in time, as opposed to waiting a few days for the legislative audit report. And I was listening to Representative McNamara. He said they had a preliminary update, but that's a different question than the actual formal report that will be coming out. And so why do you need to move the bill at this point, and why can't you wait until the 15th or in a few days? Because you said that you had to expedite it for some reason to help the businesses up your way.
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, Again, I came down here to the House of Representatives to represent the people of District 1A. And they asked me to do some things. And this is one of the things that I told them that I wanted to do, is to streamline the permitting process. It's important to me that we move forward. There's enough flexibility in the language in the bill to be able to take the legislative auditor's report at some time in the future and allow the agencies to use that information to shape how they're going to grant permits and so forth in the future, and get to the necessary timelines that they need to grant those permits. And I'm willing to work with them in order to be able to ensure that the permits are done well, but they're also done expeditiously.
Yeah, and
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I think you missed the point of my question, was why now as opposed to February the 15th? What is happening that we can't wait until that legislative audit report comes out, and so that being at least it's before this committee or will soon be before government op, there can't be a discussion as to what specifics are in that legislative audit report? Why now, early February versus mid-February? What needs to be done that you're talking about that this bill has to move that rapidly?
We need to move,
Fabian.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman. Representative Carlson, in my opinion, we need to move this forward. I've watched businesses in my district expand out of our state of Minnesota. And if you read the article in the Fargo Forum 2 weekends ago, they said they expanded outside of our state because of taxes and regulatory issues. And I'm addressing the needs and the concerns of the people in District 1A when I do this.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Fabian,
Representative
the governor has accomplished already with executive order much of this, and I don't think that there's perhaps a whole lot of disagreement that there probably couldn't be some things to streamline it. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you this question, Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, what is the effective date of your bill?
Representative Fabian.
I would assume when the governor signs it.
No, that is not correct.
Representative
Carlson. The effective date of your bill is August 1st. And so that's why I'm asking the question as to why it's necessary to move the bill forward now in early February as opposed to mid-February when the bill isn't effective until August 1st anyway. That's why I was trying to give you an opportunity, Representative Fabian, to expand on why this needs to be acted upon now prior to the legislative audit report with the timeline that you have in your bill. But, Madam Chair, I'll stop there.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. And Representative Davids, to this point?
Well, just to this point, Madam Chair, I would just say with the legislative audit report coming out, why didn't the governor wait? I think Representative Fabian has a very good bill here that we need to get going through this process here.
Thank you, Representative Davis. And I might remind members that it is the Ways and Means Committee, and we're supposed to focus on fiscal issues here. And I'm assuming that the committees that have already heard this have dealt with some of the policy issues. So with that, Representative Anderson, Sarah Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fabian, and I might suggest a friendly amendment to change the effective date to as soon as enactment, right after enactment on this. But I just want to thank you for bringing this issue forward to us, because in the examples that we have in our folder today, it screams to me the need and the urgency of addressing this issue immediately. When you look at the costs of the Kitson County project. The project itself started out at $11,950, but after you tack on all the legal fees that were involved with this issue, it became a $1.1 million project. You went from $11,950 project to a $1.1 million project. And I just appreciate the fact that you are trying to get a handle on this issue, and for quite frankly, making sure that the citizens of Minnesota know that we are tackling this issue and that they can have comfort that when they bring a project forward that we're going to get this actually done and it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to do business in the state of Minnesota. I think that's the key part, is that we are saying to folks, come here, do your business, because we are not going to make it so that it is cost prohibitive for you to have business in Minnesota. I think there was another example here too where it shows permitting and mitigation of $914,000. I mean, that's just ridiculous. when you think about that, it's no wonder that we're losing businesses to Wisconsin and to the Dakotas and everywhere else in between. And I also, too, want to thank you. I understand how difficult it is to get folks to come and testify on this issue. I had constituents talk to me last year that gave me some examples of where the whole permitting process had gone awry for them. And they said, but please don't use our names. We don't want to have retribution later on because they're in a business where they're constantly having to pull these kind of permits. So I'm glad that you brought this forward, that you are taking this issue seriously. But I also wanted to ask you, now, with the governor's executive order, now, is that permanent or does that expire at some point? Can you fill me in and why it's important to have it as statute language versus just relying on the executive order?
Representative Fabian.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the governor can rescind an executive order at any time, as I understand it, and it would also end at the end of this term.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
That's it, Madam Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Several things. I think we all...
Representative Guineas, can you use your microphone? Thank you.
Okay. I think we all want permits to issue as fast as possible, and we all appreciate doing that. That's what Governor Pawlenty worked on for 8 years. But I think we've got to be very careful in the way we tell the public what is going on in this bill, because what the governor did in his order and what your bill does are not exactly the same. And I specifically talk about Section 5, where you have a new standard that you are giving to Minnesotans. The governor very carefully does not do that. The governor says, yes, when our standards are different from the federal government, they must be explained to Minnesotans. I totally agree with that. But that's different than imposing a new standard in this bill. So that's the second thing. Madam Chair, I note the fiscal note that we got here today, and it's dated today. We did not have a fiscal note in environment finance at all. And I don't know what the rules of the road are, because I had expected a fiscal note in committee, and that we would not move on a bill without a fiscal note, particularly one that says this costs money. So could you help us out here? This is probably not Representative Fabian's question, but yours.
Thank you, Representative Guineas. As you'll see on the fiscal note, there's no current biennial cost. It's in the next biennium, and certainly I'd defer to the chair of the committee with jurisdiction over this. But we too would have preferred to have a fiscal note much earlier. As you can imagine, the agencies are quite busy with budget preparations and some of them finding their way in their new digs, if you will. And so, we've pushed, but we weren't, as you can see, able to get the final fiscal note till today. So as far as for this biennium, and I would assume that it will be taken into consideration in the next biennium when the chair works on his bill. But again, many of the components of Representative Fabian's bill before us are being done by executive order with support of the governor. Representative McNamara, did you want to weigh in at all? Or
Madam Chair, just the points you just made, that the fiscal costs for future years out are in reference to parts of the bill that are in the governor's executive order. So the governor, it's clear that the governor thinks the staff can currently do it, and so it would be my anticipation if they can do it this year, they should be able to do it in future years.
All right, thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Fabian, I live on the opposite side of the state from you. I live 12 miles from Iowa, so I know exactly what the Iowa permitting process is. And they have a goal of 60 days, and they very often are ahead of their goal. And I remember in Representative Rocavina's committee, we talked about permitting very often, and especially when we consider what they're trying to do in the mines up there. I talked to the iron mining managers today, and they reiterated it. I believe the number was 1,700 jobs are not being filled because of permitting That statement was made in your committee. I don't know if you recall that or not, but that's what they told us. I think this is time to change this stuff. It took 2 years for the Golden Oval Egg Company to move the largest feedlot in Iowa to Iowa because they couldn't permit it in Minnesota. 79 jobs. And they just got the contract for Egg McMuffins. So they had to get it going. So my recollection is 1,700 jobs. I'm saying that's 1,699 jobs too many.
Representative Kahn.
You know, I never quite remember things properly. Well, wasn't there a big scandal this summer on salmonella and eggs? And wasn't that all from eggs in Iowa?
Not for them.
What?
Not for them.
Representative Gunther.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman.
My question. It was eggs in Iowa, wasn't it?
Representative Kahn, I believe that it was, but I'm not sure what's in front of us here today.
There might have been some problems with the permitting, even if that company, because they were trained in Minnesota, didn't have that problem, but maybe there's some problem with the permitting process. And that was an incredibly expensive recall. It went all over the country because we did that. And, you know, I don't know if maybe this bill will stop those kinds of recalls, so maybe that's okay. But, I'm just
wondering.
Just wondering.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Did you have another question? You were on the list.
Yes, I did have a question on
Representative Kahn.
Which was to Representative McNamara, who said that the legislative auditor did talk, you know, and I guess if they're within 2 weeks of releasing a report, they probably know or not. But they asked the question of did they think there was material in their report that might affect the assumptions made about discharge in this bill. Were they asked that question in your committee?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Kahn, I don't remember. I don't
believe. Does anyone who was on the committee, there are other people on the committee, does anyone remember if that was asked?
I'm not.
The other people on the
committee. Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't see any of the other members on the committee remembering that. Mr. Nobles came to me and asked if he could testify that day just to give us a little bit of information because he saw it was on the agenda, and he did speak a little bit. They did not certainly release the report because they weren't ready to do that yet, but he did give us a little bit of information, and the lead auditor on the case did also.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, I commend you for carrying this legislation, and I can attest to the fact that people who are affected by these permitting processes are very, very reluctant to come forward and address us. And I can give you examples in my experience of that happening. And I also want to commend the governor for taking action. He should be commended and thanked for doing what he could do at this point in time. To this point about legislative auditor, just this afternoon in this very room, we heard from the legislative auditor about a series of reports that they did on human services where, in years past, where we as a legislature have failed to act on the recommendations, where the departments have failed to act, and we need to act. And maybe the legislative auditor's report will give us more actions that we need, but we need to understand that the legislative auditor has a great reputation. We all respect that. But unless we act in following up on the recommendations, or unless the departments act, it's of no avail.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. To this point, Representative
Lanning? On that point, I would hope that whoever keeps track of these things marks this point on the tape so we can play it back to Representative Lanning when there's some chance to act on some legislative auditor's report.
Thank you, Representative
Lanning. If I can ask someone in charge to do that for me. Thanks.
All righty. Representative Rukavina.
Can I weigh in on this at all, Madam Chair? Because Representative Gunther, you know, talked to me, and you're right, the Iron Mining Association is down today, and I'm as frustrated as anyone with permitting process, probably more than anyone in this room. I mean, Representative Fabian, I have to, you know, commend you for the bill, and I got to commend the governor for trying to do something, too. Representative Gunther, for 6 years we've been trying to. This isn't just a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. We have, you know, people who have been in agencies for years that think and are trying to do the right thing, and we may not agree with them all the time, and you know, that's just the way it is. But something is wrong when, you know, it takes 6 years and 20-some million dollars just to get a draft EIS that still isn't out the door. And I understand how copper, nickel, and I'm speaking particularly of PolyMet. I understand how sensitive the issue is, but, you know, I make the point to a lot of my friends who don't support copper, nickel mining that this cell phone that I'm reaching for, that I don't know where I put it because I always put it in a different pocket, but it's got, along with this right here, there's the same, you just have a bigger version with big, more minerals in it. It's got 26 different precious minerals in here. And we have the second and third largest copper and nickel deposits in the world, we think, in Minnesota, much of which is on school trust land that would generate huge amounts of money for our pupils in this state with no increase in taxes. But it is frustrating. And it's even more frustrating to open up a line. I think Kiewit and Taconite was trying to, they used to produce 7 million tons of ore, Representative Fabian, and they closed a line, one of their lines, that had the capability of about 2 million of that, and they shut it down. And to reopen it, of course, there were all new regulations, both federal, which we can't control, and state, and to open up a line that for 20 years ran perfectly well, but to reopen it, it's taken over 2 years of permitting. So it's very frustrating, and I understand the concerns for on the environmental side, but I don't think there's anybody in this room, when we've been talking jobs for the last several years in this state, and there is potential of thousands of jobs up in my area, that would put up with 6 years just to get a draft environmental impact statement out the door that still isn't out the door. We hope now it'll be out by the summer, and then that'll be about 6.5 years.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, there are only two people in this room who actually voted for something that started that all, and that was a copper nickel study that was done in the, I guess maybe it got to be the mid-70s, which was got an enormous amount of information about the deposits there, core deposits and so forth. So people sometimes have to understand that there's a lot of information that you need that goes into these things. And besides getting the information, there's a lot of analysis of the information that's needed. I don't know if you've read that whole story, Representative Rukavina, but I recommend it.
Thank you. Representative Kahn, I am seeing no other questions or comments. I would like to renew my motion that House File 1 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Representative Fabian. The next item on our agenda is House File 79, Chair Davids. And following this bill, I'm going to ask House Republican and DFL Research to come to the stand. Representative Davids, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 79 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thank you very much. And we also have an amendment in our packets, I believe. Is that your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move the A3 amendment.
All right. Thank you. Would you explain the amendment to the committee, please?
Yes. What it does is it changes the effective date to the day following final enactment, so it would take effect right away.
All right. Any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A3 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm not aware of any legislative auditor's report that is due regarding this issue, so I think we're good there. If you look at the from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, you'll see that there is an expense here of $200,000. The question may come up, why aren't you doing this for 2012 and 2013? Well, basically because it's more than $200,000. This bill, just so members know, is in House File 130, and if the governor would see in his infinite wisdom to sign that bill into law, this bill would not be needed. If for some unforeseen reason the governor would veto the bill, then what we're doing is we're coming back and we're conforming with this federal conformity issue here. Basically what we're looking at, if you look on the bill as amended, page 2, I'm curious, maybe someone in House Research, 2.15 says for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2009 or before January 1st, 2011. Why don't we just say 2010? Is there any specific reason for that?
Mr. Marks, Ms. Novak? I guess we're going to have you phone a friend and have Mr. Michaels come down. Welcome to the committee. You'd state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, I'm Joel Michael from House Research. I think the answer is that it's sort of done both ways. You could actually say for taxable years beginning during calendar year 2010. For some reason, this convention has been used for as long as I've been around.
Madam Chair, that's good enough for me.
But
any other? Well, thank you, Mr. Michael. You can stay if you
want. Any other questions for Mr. Michaels while he's at the stand? If not, any questions for the bill author?
Okay, Madam Chair, if I could just briefly describe the bill and what we're doing here.
Okay.
This is the federal conformity issue regarding the Health Care Act, Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act of 2010. What we're doing here, that's where the children can be covered up until age 26. And so what we're doing is we're simply conforming with the federal law, current federal law, on this bill. So that's all we're doing. It's very specific just to that. This has been a very interesting bill. Small business in committee came and testified on behalf of the bill. Large business, counties, unions, the cities, anyone with a payroll department is supporting this bill. And a couple things in the bill. First of all, if they've already issued the W-2s to comply with the law, they do not have to reissue W-2s. And also, well, basically, that's what we're looking at here. We're just simply conforming with current federal law on this bill. Appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And I think from my read, actually, I think people are required to put their children up to age 26 if they don't have other coverage. Not that they get to, they must. So this would then allow for them not to suffer additional taxes as a result of being required to carry their children on their insurance. Is that correct?
We might want to check with counsel. I believe that's correct. And of course,
looks like Mr. Michaels is coming to visit us again. Mr. Michaels.
Madam Chair, my understanding is that employers are required to offer this coverage. I believe that the employee can make a choice as to whether they opt to provide, you know, to provide the coverage or not.
All right. Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Representative Lomcheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for members who don't serve on the tax committee had a big discussion about all this, and this bill passed, this small piece of tax conformity passed, I think, with everybody voting for it. However, just, you know, to bring up, there's a lot more in federal conformity that's not being addressed here. And I did hear Representative Chair David say, you know, this is the one that costs this much. But, this is a critical piece to President Obama's national health care reform. And there are a number of other items here that are zero items that are not being included. And, you know, I just a little bit on the process, maybe either for you, Chair Holberg, or Chair Davids. You know, we did, you all just passed a lot bigger conformity bill in the House File 130. This piece was in it. So now, you know, I heard what Chair David said. Well, maybe Governor Dayton won't like that bill, so now we're going to do this bill. And I understand that as well. So I hear you there, although I would say there are a lot more pieces still that aren't zero items that might belong here. But just as, you know, thinking about the process here now, was it yesterday or the day before a judge in Florida said President Obama's health care reform is unconstitutional? Was that judge's opinion? And my understanding is 27 states are siding with this judge, and so nobody really knows what's going to happen with President Obama's national health care reform, and here we are right now getting ready to vote to confirm some of that. So I'm just trying to think, you know, for process now, what's the intention here? Are we, you know, I just kind of big picture stepping back. When we heard it in taxes, that judge had not yet ruled that his opinion was that President Obama's Health Care Reform Act was unconstitutional. So is there an urgency now? You know, obviously there's the convenience for the taxpayers, but is there, the majority have an intention on how to handle this issue as it's now evolving right in front of us?
Well, Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a legislative audit report coming out on Obamacare's constitutionality, so we can probably take from there. With that being said, the
sure
law is clearly unconstitutional. if you not
Judge
my law,
Davids.
Not my law. No, you know, because two judges have ruled that it's fine and dandy. Well, that's the status quo, so that means nothing. Two judges have ruled that it's unconstitutional, so therefore it is unconstitutional. Okay. That's not even 2-2, because it's actually 0-2, because the two that ruled it's okay, that doesn't matter because that's the status quo. The two that ruled that it's unconstitutional, it was clearly unconstitutional. That being said, please support my unconstitutional bill if you can, because very simply what we're doing here, and this is going to be a long drawn out process, it'll go to the Supreme Court and so forth, and that's not for us today. What we're looking at today and what this bill simply does is it helps a lot of, well, it helps any HR department and any human resource department, any payroll department, and what we're doing here is we're simply saying we will conform with current law, even though it's been declared unconstitutional. We will conform with that, and it really, really helps, like I said, every small business, every large business, every city, every county, anyone that has to write a payroll check. And what we're doing is we're making it so that they don't have to reissue W-2s, and we're also making it so that, the big thing here is the W-2s, and the, from what I understand, I'd ask a question for Mr. Michael. Would it be fair to say that with this bill that if someone pays estimates, and if they're off on their estimates because of this, that the Department of Revenue can't come after them because of that?
Mr.
Michaels.
Do you
understand anything of what I just said?
Me too.
Mr. Michaels.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if this bill passes and you conform to the federal taxation of this, there will be no tax liability for this income. So to the extent that would have otherwise caused you to have an estimated tax penalty, yes, it could help on that, to answer the chair's question.
Madam Chair, that's what I meant to say.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Any questions on this? Representative Lynchesky.
Well, Madam Chair, just, you know, for the record, I mean, just so the public knows, and again, this was voted for, I think, by everybody in the room, this one piece. But, you know, I do want to be clear that the rest of the Patient Protection Act had six other, you know, helpful provisions to taxpayers that we're not conforming to, and I won't go into them now. And for tax year 2010, because this is a one-year tax bill, there were no costs to any of them, and yet they're not in here. So I think that is a concern. I will say that, you know, I was unsuccessful in getting Governor Pawlenty to do them. But, you know, it appears that there's been a change in the wind here, so I'm just concerned that they're not there. And then additionally, the Small Business Jobs Act, which also happened by Congress, has a number of provisions that we need to look at, and they're not being addressed. But I will say, Madam Chair, I hope as you're keeping track of all the money, you know, as things come through, you know, the most expensive conformity of all, which has to be dealt with in this legislative session, is the extension of the Bush tax cuts. And so I think this Ways and Means Committee is going to have to think long and hard about how they're going to pass on the Bush income tax cuts to all Minnesotans. And if they don't, are they willing to raise Minnesotans' income taxes? So that's a longer discussion for another day, but I do think for the bigger picture, there's a lot more going on than this one provision. There's lots of things. If any members are interested in this, you should get out the list and pore over, and Representative Davids, Chair Davids, is choosing this one single provision. And sure, it's a good one, it's popular, and it's cheap. But there's a whole bunch more we're not doing, and it's going to make all kinds of taxpayers extremely frustrated, and we're going to get the phone calls when they can't transfer things from their IRA to charitable, you know, to their charities and all kinds of other things that are going on here. And so I think, you know, I'm comfortable again voting for this today, but I do think there's a lot more going on in tax conformity that we need to think about early in the legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would encourage Representative Lincheski, and I'd be happy to go over to the governor's office with her and convince the governor to sign House File 130, that fine piece of legislation that he should consider signing, because that takes care of a lot of the concerns that you have. Now, not the Bush tax cuts, but it does the Section 179 accelerated depreciation. It does the other, I don't see Obamacare, because then I lose my sight here. What's it called here? federal conformity income exclusion for health coverage of adult children up to age 26. I'll walk over there with you. Be happy to visit, because that could really do some good things for the budget forecast that comes out, the February forecast. It could do some good things. So I hope he's at least considering it, because it does take care of a lot of the issues that, you and I agree both, I think we both agree, need to happen. So with that, I'd really appreciate the member support on House File 79 that conforms with the federal law that's been recently found unconstitutional.
Would you like to renew your motion that House File 79, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register?
That's my motion.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Members, I ask that the research for our Republicans and Democrats come to the stand real quickly. I'm not going to go through introductions for all the members. We're all returning members, and that would probably not be a good use of time. But I'd like to start with introductions of the staff at the table that will be working with the committee, starting with Ms. Novak.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Kathy Novak with the House Research Department.
Thank you. Mr. Marks.
Bill Marks, fiscal staff.
Hello, members. Harry Kennedy, committee administrator.
And Mr. Kennedy, you want to give him a little background of how you ended up here?
Well, I'm an attorney for the past, since 1997, and I practiced in both the private and public sectors. And for the last 4 years, served as a senior policy advisor for the Plenty administration.
And Mr. Kennedy will be the one that will be working on the fiscal notes. If members need information about them or want to request them, he would be the one that would be able to help you with that. And then to my left,
Alex Smith, committee legislative assistant.
And you came to us from?
I'm coming from Representative Peter Roscom's district office in Illinois.
Newly married with a wife attending pharmacy school at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
So, and gentlemen at the desk.
Craig Stone, GOP Research.
Thank you.
I'm David Sullivan with DFL Research.
All right, thank you. And then if our pages could step to the stand. If you would introduce yourself, a little background for the committee members.
Angelique McDonald, I'd like to suck up to my boss by wearing the same color as her. And I have two bachelor's degrees and a master's degree in public policy, and most recently I was with Meserle and Kramer and then with Randy Demmer.
All right, thank you. And is Patrick running paperwork?
Not here, so he's running paper, but Pat is my other counterpart, and I'm sure plenty of you saw him on the campaign trail working as well.
And we'll catch him at the next meeting. Briefly, where we're going from here, our next meeting will be Thursday, February 3rd, following the floor session. I have no idea how long floor session will last. The earliest that we would start would be 4
4 p.m., and we will do the alternative teacher licensure bill. I don't recall the number, but I believe the author of the bill is here and probably knows it. Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's House File 63.
All right. Thank you, members. Any questions? If not, I believe that there's a whole passel of people with red and black plaid vests on that are Bemidji days. So with that, the meeting's adjourned, and thank you.